Thank you, David, for that very kind introduction. Thank you, Lord Debham, for making my talk really, really hard. It's an absolute pleasure. So but what I'm going to do is actually probably just be a wash-up act for the opening act there, and I'm going to present some of the data and some of the science that underpins some of the statements that John has just made as part of his introduction. So as I said, I'm Paul Monks, I'm the Chief Scientific Advisor. I'm really going to talk a little bit about the science that underpins this. John has said, of course, that I can't say kilowatt hour or megawatt hour or gigawatts or terawatts. I'm afraid there are some in there, so I'm very, very sorry about that. For me, though, the relationship between science and policy is summed up in this, and this is the challenge of net zero writ large. I took a picture of this at a door I was walking past at the university, and it's a great quote by a guy called H.R. Mencken, and he said, "For every complex problem, there's an answer that is clear, simple, and wrong." And for me, that is the challenge of net zero. It is a complex systems problem, and there aren't any simple answers out there. And actually, this is why it fills a room and we get great debates in some respects, because that's the nature of that. As John said, you know, we were the first country to legislate for net zero. We're actually one of the few in the world that still actually has a legislative on our legislative outcome on that. And in 2019, during the Theresa May government, the government upped its ambition to 100% by 2050 compared to 1990 levels. So when we're talking about net zero, that's what we mean, net reduction of 100% compared to 1990 levels. And we do that through a series of carbon budgets, through the Climate Change Act, and we set the carbon budget 6, which was the mid-30s, and we're just beginning to think about carbon budget 7 as well. And the CCC, the Climate Change Committee, are the people that hold the government to account over this. It also feeds into the international process and the nationally determined contributions, and for example, we announced that during the COP 26 process, the NDC for that. So what does this look like at the moment? Carbon Budget 6 set an ambition for 78%, I shouldn't say ambition because it's by law, isn't it? Set an outcome of 78% reduction by 2035. And the government laid out the science and the policies to do that in the net zero strategy that it published in 2021. There's been a number of other things going out. I think I joke on a yearly basis when I talk about this, and I was there when the net zero strategy is changed, and you would think that something like climate change, which is a long-term issue, it's about setting long-term solutions, and actually every year something market has changed that has changed our want and our need and the speed of change that we need to have around that. So I think that absolutely I agree that speed of change and agility around this is important. I'll get back to that a little bit later in this. As John said, we have a good track record in the UK, one of the strongest track records globally with respect to decarbonisation around minus 48% since 1990 levels. But if you know anything about these sort of numbers, we need to go further than this to meet the goal of net zero by 2050. We need a greater rate of change than's on this graph. It's worth digging in a little bit one layer down to what really has driven those reductions and where many of those has come from. And you can clearly see there the sector that has most decarbonized, the biggest percentage of reduction is power, with fuel supply second. And you can see other sectors such as transport and buildings, which are much slower to decarbonize. And that gives you a flavor of where the challenges lie in the future with respect to net zero. I'm sorry, there is a terawatt hour on here. So if we look at that, and we look at the energy mixture that we need for the front, and I always say when I talk about this, we get kind of electricity and energy mixed up, and we switch between those units quite freely. If you look at electricity, it's a great story. We have decarbonized. You see the growth of renewables. The last coal station is about to be turned off in the United Kingdom, if it hasn't already been turned off around that. We're still quite dependent on imported gas. There's a growth of renewables, and nuclear is an important part of that. But if we look at the amount of energy that we use, it's about 40-40-20. It's about 40% of the energy that we use in the United Kingdom is in transport, 40% is in heating, and about 20% is in electricity that we use now. And that lays out the challenge in some senses for the future, because much of that is going to become electricity. And actually, if we look to the future, we're going to double the amount of electricity probably that we need by 2050, and we need that to be low carbon. We need it to be 24/7 on back of renewables, and that is not an indistinct challenge, which I can debate until the flipping cows come home about what the system should look like. So it really does need that policy ambition, as John outlined, that delivery, and also, as he said, also that green investment as part of that. As I said, the NDC is 68% reduction by 2030, CB6 is 77% by 2035. The capital investment is going to need to be about 50 to 60 billion a year in order to achieve that as part of that. And we're looking at how to increase the rate of delivery of that and the science that underpins that. I think some general comments to kind of go away from that kind of background to where does science help us and what does science help us do. As I've already said, it's a systems problem. It is a systems problem, and you can tell this is a systems diagram because it's got lots of lines on it, and that makes it a systems diagram. But it actually tells you more than this. This is just the energy transition. It doesn't really matter what system it is. But actually what you can see on here is there's a technological change that's required, in this case, to decarbonize the electricity system. But that's also dependent on consumer behavior and behavior change. So this is a social problem as well as being a technical problem. And as John said, also you need finance to do that. So it's actually a social, a technical, and an economic problem. So when we talk about this as a systems problem, it's a system of systems problem in the UK context, which is finance, economics, behavior change, and technical, socio-technical economic. And that sits in the global challenge of the global energy transition and the global economic transition. So I think remembering that this is a systems problem, not overcomplicating it and delivering it is important, not getting systems torpor as part of trying to deliver that, but recognizing you've got the three legs of the stool here, the social, the economic, and the technical is important. And if we just look at the social aspects of this and the green choices, if you look at Carbon Budget 6, 45% of those emission savings require the public to make green choices. And actually, these are different decarbonisation sectors in this graph at the top here, and in red is where green choices are required. So as John said, we do not think, and you cannot achieve this by a technocratic approach to net zero. You have to have a socio-technical economic approach as part of that. If we go back to the energy system, this begins to what it looks like. This is the system and what it looks like. And you're trying to work out what the correct mixture of production, storage, and use that delivers that. You've got the different flows within that energy system, hydrogen, electrons, synthetic hydrocarbon fuels, and the like. You've got the different ways of generating that, the different ways of storing that, and the different ways of using that. In a way, that's the balance that we're trying to do in this system. And I think the thing I found shocking this week is I did a round table and talking about what would happen if we needed to do energy demand reduction. And people, actually, the thing that came out of this round table was people don't understand what role electricity plays in their lives. I thought with the economic crisis and the questions around Russia-Ukraine, people did, and it's apparent that people still don't understand that. And we will be in a changed world by 2050 in terms of that, and it will be mainly renewables with a little bit of hydrogen. There is some residual elements of that, and it will be a fundamental shift from a very carbon-intensive centralised generation, predictable, to a low-carbon, more distributed storage. I went to a big long meeting about storage this afternoon, big data and AI and all those sort of things. So we are moving into a very different world around net zero. So what role for research and innovation, to finish off, what role for research and innovation in this? Having said it's a socio-technical and economic, I'm going to now just kind of give you a techie view of that. This is some wonderful research from the International Energy Authority that said, if you look at it now to 2030, we have 80% of the technologies that we need. So absolutely, with respect to getting to net zero, it's rolling out the technologies at scale that we have this decade, that it's important. But if we look at the hardest to decarbonize sectors out to 2050, there's still a lot of research and innovation that's required. The IEA estimate there's 50% of those technologies that are under development or need to be deployed over those sort of periods of time. For me, as a scientist, thinking about that, I say the net zero transition needs to be sustainable in the way that we meet it, resilient to the pathways that we use, measurable so we know the progress we're making. And I think more and more, I'm realizing it needs to be deliverable. And that's kind of the engineering challenge that we face in this, the engineering deliverability. We want to decarbonize the power system by 2035. That is actually an engineering deliverability problem. We've got the technologies, it's just rolling them out, and that's the scale. We have some key science challenges. This is my list, and it is included, it's not all the list, hydrogen, CCUS, negative emissions, which we don't really ever talk about, but we're going to, it's in all the plans, that we're going to have to deliver it. Critical minerals, as we move away from fossil fuel feedstocks to electrification, that changes the footprint around that. Resource and energy efficiency, massively overlooked areas about the way that we use things and the efficiency that we do. Sustainable carbon feedstocks, I'll give you the punchline, there are only two, it's carbon dioxide and methane. The rest of it is not sustainable in one way or the other. And that requires also a lot of energy. So there's some real challenges around that. Agricultural emissions. Should we feed cows seaweed? I don't know. But I mean, it's very tricky to decarbonize sector around that. This is not just a mitigation problem, it's an adaptation problem. We could be thinking about that alongside, and Julia's after, so that's probably the handover to Julia around that. And we've got to think about the behavior changes and the green choices around that. We have done that in government a little bit. We've put out the Net Zero Research Innovation Framework and a delivery plan for that. It is a systems approach. It's a systems approach to delivering that. It recognizes that system for decarbonization is underpinned by digital, much and often forgotten digital as part of this. It is by finance. I've made that point. It is by good policy. It is by skills, because it's the bingo word. You know, if you don't go to a meeting and say the word skills, you feel cheated in some way around that. But it's also really around that engaged citizen sustainable choices piece as well. So really, research and innovation does lie at the heart of those challenges of the difficult to decarbonize sectors in the future. So for me, some take homes, it's a net zero is a pervasive problem through everything that we do. It needs a systems approach and courting behaviour and change, and research and innovation is critical to delivering the outcomes that we need. I look forward to the debate later. Thank you.